Now, on to the State of the State message. The governor presented budget priorities and suggestions for legislative action in his almost $27 billion spending plan last night. Education and Medicaid were among numerous issues addressed by the governor. What happens now? It's a big question because the Democratic governor's party is heavily outnumbered in the Republican-led General Assembly. With me to discuss the state of the state as outlined by the governor are Terry Jones, who chairs the Department of Political Science at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, and Joe Manis, political reporter for the St. Louis Beacon. Before we begin, congratulations are in order for Joe, who has just received the John Michael McGuire Lifetime Achievement Award from the United Media Guild, especially meaningful because John McGuire was a longtime colleague and friend. Joe,
yes,
congratulations.
Well,
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Let's start with you. Your face is red. I'm sorry I made you blush. let's start with you. We've been reading that Governor Nixon last night was described as aggressive. Was that a term you would use?
No. I would say assertive, and only in parts of it. In my story, I talked about how he brought up the education spending he wants to increase, a whole bunch of other issues before he got down to the big issue that was on the minds of everybody in the room, was his support for expanding the Medicaid in Missouri to at least about 260,000 to be at the beginning and about 300,000 they're estimating within 3 years. It's fully funded by the federal government for 3 years. The Republicans oppose it because they believe that, A, the federal government doesn't have the money, and, B, they philosophically don't think government should have that larger role in health care. And he made a more passionate case than I have heard him, where he laid out, A, the fact that many business groups, who he pointed out were no friends of the president, are backing it because it's an economic decision. And he also emphasized that, look, this is a law of the land. I had issues with parts of it. You had issues with parts of it. That's over. Let's go forward. That was interesting and very noteworthy because this is a ramping up of, I would say, his appeal on the Medicaid front since he was reelected in early November. The only part where I would say that he was aggressive would be near the end, where he brought up an old issue, which has been something close to his heart, actually, for about 20 years, which is campaign donation limits. He's brought it up before, and nothing's really happened. And this time, he's told the legislature that if you guys don't put him back on, I'm going to get this on the ballot, and I'm going to get it passed. But talking is different than doing.
So. We're going to play a clip of that and go back to Medicaid in just a second. But, Terry, same question to you with regard to the term aggressive and the—
Well, again, I would agree with Joe's characterization as assertive with a down-home style.
Yes.
And a conciliatory tone when it came to the Medicaid expansion, agreeing with the Republican criticism that the federal government might not be able to fulfill its benefits and agreeing to having the conditions in Missouri's legislation that would anticipate that and give Missouri the option of opting out. If that happened.
Let's listen to what the governor had to say with regard to Medicaid, at least in part, and get some sense of the tone and the things that he was talking about.
A stronger Medicaid system will make health care available to 300,000 of our friends and neighbors. Yeah. Let me be clear about who these people are. They're working Missourians, okay? Folks who work day and night but simply can't afford health coverage. These are not people who aren't trying or hoping to game the system. They're folks we see every day, some holding down two jobs just to make ends meet. We're talking about a family of four with a household income of roughly $32,000 a year. They wait tables and clean office buildings. They cut hair and trim trees. They work in factories and repair cars and trucks. Making it easier for these hardworking Missourians to get basic health insurance, that's the right thing to do.
Well, the right thing to do, according to the governor, but apparently is not going to be the right thing to do, according to the Republican majorities. Tim Jones, the House Speaker, and a post-State of the State message rebuttal, if I can use that term, had this to say about the governor's Medicaid plans.
We have a governor and a federal government that believes bigger government is the answer. They want to take us down a fiscally irresponsible path that will saddle future generations of Missourians with a bill they cannot afford. It's a path Republicans will not follow.
And Terry Jones, so the battle lines are drawn on this, and the Republicans have the majority.
Yes, but it echoes policy battles of the past. Republicans were saying the same thing about Social Security in the 1930s, same thing about Medicare and Medicaid in the 1960s. These things typically take 2 to 4 to 5 years to completely roll out through the states, particularly when the states are partners in the enterprise. It might not happen, that is to say Medicaid expansion might not happen in Missouri in 2013, but the battle is not going to go away. The program's not going to go away. And sometime over the next 2 or 3 years, I would anticipate Missouri signing on.
And Joe, the governor, I thought, was fairly compelling in drawing the list and the line of people who are affected by all of this. They are, after all, constituents of members of the legislature.
Yes. And I, as I mentioned before, I would say that he was offered a more passionate view of these are the people, they're working, they're not deadbeats, but they can't afford coverage or they can't get coverage or their employer doesn't provide coverage. And so this was the most detailed push that he's given. Right before his speech, his budget director had given a pretty specific detailed thing by the numbers. And we're talking about close to $1 billion in federal money for the first year. And one of the hangups is that if Missouri, let's say, delays, at least as it stands now, the federal government pays for those first 3 years, but it's the 3 years starting in 2014. So if you're slow getting on, you're going to miss at least one of those free years. Doesn't mean that you can show up 3 or 4 years later and get those first free years. Those three free years are supposed to be 2014, 2015, and 2016. And so if you delay it, allegedly you're out of the money.
But he cast them a bone and basically saying if the government does renege in any sense, that he'll back away from all of this.
And yes, those dollars are the carrot. There's also a stick, which everybody on both sides of the aisle acknowledges, and that's the federal payments for uncompensated care, emergency room visits and the like, that are now constitute roughly $500 million in Missouri that will be diminished considerably under the Affordable Care Act. So hospitals are going to be left in the lurch unless the support comes from Medicaid expansion to take up that slack.
Yeah. So go ahead, Joe.
And this is particularly serious in rural Missouri because you have a number of small hospitals. Maybe they've only got 25, 30 beds. And maybe they get, because there's a high percentage of their patients do not have insurance, that some of them rely on this just to make the payroll. And I suspect that the Missouri Hospital Association has been emphasizing this, but I think it will take one or more of these rural hospitals to either close or be close to closing before you have some rural legislators, and in Missouri they're virtually all Republican, to maybe take a second look at this. Now, they may not. They're going to be under a lot of pressure from the leadership. Now, another interesting angle of this is that in Missouri General Assembly, the Republican leadership is all suburban St. Louis right now, which is unusual for the Senate and the House. So the urban hospitals will feel the pinch, but not to the extent of the rural hospitals. So there's this, you may see the rural-urban divide come into play here.
And we've certainly talked about that before. Before I come back to this and other issues stemming from last night's State of the State Address, I have to take a break. We're talking in the response to the governor's State of the State Address last night in Jefferson City. With me in studio, Joe Manis of the St. Louis Beacon. That's stlbeacon.org. We always like
Thanks.
To get that in for Joe. Terry Jones of the University of Missouri St. Louis political scientist also with us. By the way, for those of you who were with us at the top of the program and heard our report from Adam Allington from Keener Plaza, you can find a photo of the protest that Adam was talking about. He tweeted it to us, and we have retweeted. Say that three times fast. Well, we've redone it, and it's on our account, STL On Air. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our analysis of the State of the State address by Governor Jay Nixon last night. With me in studio, Terry Jones, political scientist at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, and Joe Manis of the St. Louis Beacon. So, Terry, does this mean that the Medicaid thing is probably going to go right down to the wire? Is that what you'd be looking at?
I think it's going to be the major issue of the session. I think its odds of passing are low because of the Republican opposition. But as I've already indicated, it's not going to go away. And when the cost of it and the dollars going out of Missouri not coming back become even more apparent, as business coalition grows and that the governor wielded that particular blow yesterday by having the coalition there and stand up, Republicans are going to find it more and more difficult to continue to oppose having the Affordable Care Act operate and Medicaid expand in Missouri.
Anything to add, Joe?
Yeah, I think that you'll see a little bit of a tension within the Republican donor ranks because you've got the Missouri Chamber of Commerce, which is endorsing it, although this was not on the list of the priorities that they sent out a few weeks ago. But I think I've noticed that they've gotten a little more high profile just in the last week. But then you've also got other donors like Rex Sinkfeld and some others who philosophically are in line with the Republican leadership that this is not the way to go. So you could see some tension within the traditional coalition that supports Republicans in the state. So that will be something to watch to see how that plays out and who has the most muscle. I thought initially that this had no chance. I still think it's very slim. But seeing some of these lines coming up in the last week or so, I think this could be more of a debate than I had expected.
The coalition expanded from the Missouri Hospital Association, which has always been for the expansion, and other healthcare interests now to include these business groups, which were very powerful in the state of Missouri, as they are in other states.
Yeah, because the Hospital Association, some of the others, while they're for it, they didn't say anything this fall before the election. I think it was an intentional reason. They didn't want to get wrapped up in the fight over Prop E, which was the vote that requires legislative or public approval before a healthcare exchange can be set up in the state. But by not playing a role and then coming out big right after the election, they were basically advocating that legislators who had just got elected take a different view than what they'd campaigned on. And I'm not sure if strategically that was – and I'm not taking sides, but I'm just saying strategically that might not have been smart.
I wanted to move on to something else. I want to move on to something else, and will in just a moment. But we have a caller who wants to get into the Medicaid conversation, so let's bring in Dennis.
Yeah, in the state of Missouri, well, actually, in probably every state of the United States, Walmart is one of the biggest people that benefits from Medicaid, and not taking this money will. I don't know where they're going to fall down on this. But I know that Tim Jones is hooked up to ALEC, and I know you guys have talked about ALEC before. It just boggles the mind that Republicans that always talk about family values are standing in the way of something that would give the ability for a lot of poor and middle-class people to have something that we all kind of take for granted. And one other thing is musicians all across this state are looking around at other states that might have take this money, and we run the risk of losing a lot of our talent, maybe not all of it, obviously, but if you can go to New Orleans or Austin or other places and be able to perform and have health care as opposed to not, it's I would, if I was in Branson and running a club, I'd be concerned.
All right, Dennis, thanks for the call.
It's easier to for Republicans in Missouri to resist this as long as many other states are doing the same thing. But as more and more states fall off the fence and go on to the side of incorporating and expanding Medicaid, Arizona and Arkansas are two recent examples, both of which have Republican power in them, it's going to be more difficult for Missouri Republicans to stay the course.
Well, let's move on to something else. A lot of things to discuss today. The issue of campaign finance and ethics is at one point in the speech in which I thought Mr. Nixon was very aggressive. Let's listen to a short clip of what he had to say about that.
If the legislature does not send a campaign contribution limit bill to my desk, I will do everything within my power to get it on the ballot and make sure it passes.
Joe, it sounds like a line in the sand to me.
Yes. To me, I found that somewhat intriguing because so during his first term, while he had mentioned that he wanted to reinstate campaign limits, which in Missouri were eliminated for sure in 2008, this was at the end of Matt Blunt's term, that while he advocated restoring it, he wasn't pressing it. In fact, at one point, the Missouri Democratic Party was going to do an initiative petition drive to try to get it on the ballot in 2012, and then they just didn't do it. They announced it, but then nothing happened. So now he has put it in as arguably his most high-profile speech of the year. So I think now he's going to have to produce. But there is some time constraints here. When does he try to put this on the ballot? Does he try for 2014, which is when legislators will be on the ballot, but no really high-profile Missouri races to bring out the type of voters that he's going to need? If he waits till 2016, that's going to be like his last year. Of course, he might at that point be running for something else. So I think timing is something to watch. I don't expect to see this in the next year or so because of just what I mentioned. But I thought it was interesting that he did really bring it up and push it. And I want to add that I am old enough that I actually was in Washington in the Supreme Court building and watched his argument in 1998 when he, as Attorney General, was defending Missouri's campaign donation limits, which were under a lawsuit.
That's why you got a Lifetime Achievement Award. Well, you've been around for a while, Joe. Terry, your thoughts on this part of it?
First of all, it's very difficult to regulate campaign finance. Even putting limits on it, there will be ways to get around those limits. So the impact of any reform is probably less than first meets the eye. Second, this is not the type of policy that's good to write through an initiative petition because it's complex. And it, if you do a yes or no on an initiative petition, you don't have the chance to amend and adapt. And third, you could say possibly this is the governor appealing to the progressive element of the Democratic Party for something they want to hear, but not something that he's going to go to the mat with.
Well, and if you go back to the 1990s, the reason Missouri got campaign donation limits, and this is rather interesting, is that in the early 1990s, after Mel Carnahan got elected in 92, you had a coalition of people, which, by the way, included Roy Blunt, who were advocating campaign donation limits. And so the legislature, which was then Democratic, came up with something in part because they were afraid of an initiative petition drive. Now, there was a group, though, that pressed for initiative petition drive anyway. And actually, Missourians, when they talk about Missourians passing campaign donation limits, they actually approved stricter, lower limits than what we actually ended up with. That's what – there was a court fight that went on for years over which limits were going to be in effect. So I think Nixon's looking at that saying, look, voters will approve it because they approved something that only allowed $600 donations for governor. Now, the Republicans came out right away and pointed out that the governor has collected millions – in very large donations over the last few years. And so they're trying to portray him as a hypocrite. Of course, he has said, I've asked him about this several times, that, well, if we had limits, he would love to follow them. But if we don't have limits, I'm not going to stand around and not raise the money needed to defend myself. So I think this does create some tension. But I agree with Terry Jones that it'll be I will watch closely to see whether or not something actually ends up on the ballot and when, as I mentioned before.
Terry, a question about process. How quickly can something like this get going? I mean, it can be a long, drawn-out process, collecting the signatures and going through that process. But how quickly could it be done, would you think?
It would be at least a 2 to 4 month operation to collect the signatures. But again, we're talking about the 2014 ballot, so an operation that started late in 2013 would have ample time. The signatures are due in May of 2014 in order to get on November 2014
Correct.
Ballot.
So we've got a year. Mm-hmm. There is a year, I should say we've got. There is a year between now and
but
that
But it costs
deadline.
Money yeah. also. And one issue is, okay, he's going to be raising money. Is he going to be raising money for this? And will donors who had given him all this money, as I mentioned before, will they be willing to give him money for this? So I think that's something that we'll all be watching.
Let's move on to the subject of education now, as another big part of what he had to say last night. We have a clip of the governor and some of the things that he had to say. Let's listen.
So on my budget, we increase funding for education, and we increase it by $150 million. That's $17 million more for early childhood education. That's $34 million more for higher education. And that's $100 million more for our K through 12 classrooms. Our children are our first priority. They are Missouri's future.
Terry, the educator in the panel here, what are your thoughts about some of the things he had to say?
Well, first of all, let's talk about what he did not say, and that is, I'm not going to decrease taxes. We have a slight increase, a 3% or so increase in revenue for the state, and instead of having a program that had some decreases in taxes, which the Republicans would like to see, he's saying we need to spend that money on these things, and education is high among them. It's still, though, that's roughly, we spend about $4 billion a year of state dollars on education, K through 12, pre-K and higher education. So $100 million is very meaningful, but it's still a fairly small increase in the overall budget.
One of the proposals that's been talked about is tying funding for higher education to performance. Any thoughts on that?
Well, that message was sent to the leadership in higher education over a year ago, and there have been a lot of discussions and conferences and negotiations and about what those standards would be. And I think there's consensus among the leadership in higher education about those standards and the acceptance of them.
Joe, your thoughts on the education proposals?
Well, for first, even though he is proposing adding more to be spent on education, it's still like the foundation formula, which is the basic program that doles out aid for K through 12 in the state, is still less than what it would be if it was fully funded. So he's not proposing to fully fund. So he's still hundreds of millions off on that. B, he put all this at the beginning of his speech, which was, I thought that the organization of his speech was almost as important as what he said. He put the crowd-pleasing stuff at the beginning, including the education stuff, in part because I think he knew, and whoever helped write his speech knew, that people who are listening to the speech will be paying most attention at the beginning. And he's also kind of laying a groundwork here. If Republicans want to cut taxes, which they're talking about doing, especially for corporations, they're talking about phasing out the entire corporate income tax over 5 years, which would be about $500 million out of the state budget, that they will have to do that in other words, he's setting it up so people listening to the speech will see this as corporate taxes versus more spending on education. So he tried to put the crowd-pleasing stuff so that people listening or watching the speech or later when there's debates, he's going to say, well, do you want to cut taxes or do you want to spend money on education? So, and by casting Medicaid as totally federally funded and not involved in this, I think he's trying to set this up so this becomes a choice for legislators. It's not that they can just cut taxes and make one side happy and the other side not be happy.
And it's an economic development argument. The governor is saying the best way to develop the economy if you have 100 million to 150 million is to invest more in education. Some Republicans would say let's cut taxes, particularly business taxes, by 100 to 150 million to encourage more business.
But he's also been setting – he has been – and this has been a bit assertive for him, unusually, in his briefing that he did before the speech – and his budget director said the similar words. He has been pressing the point that Missouri already is a low-tax state. This isn't something that he used to say a lot during his first term. He's saying that a lot now. And so he's saying, look, we're already a low-tax state. The businesses who come here, they know we're a low-tax state. We're already among the few lowest, but they're looking at other things, whether or not our workforce is educated, so forth and so on. He basically is trying to set up the argument saying, don't do this. I am not going to support this. And I don't care what Kansas is doing, because, you know, Kansas is eliminating their corporate income tax and also part of their individual income tax, but they're also already have a deficit of about $800 million in their state budget.
It's quite a difference going before the legislature when you're not running for anything again, at least in this state, isn't it? I mean, he is in a more comfortable position, I'm sure.
Well, and you can see it.
Yeah.
You can see it, because this was more like the – I sound like an old fart here, but like the old Nixon back when he
– We're taking away that lifetime achievement award if you're using that word.
Sorry, but when he was first attorney general, he was very assertive and then gradually was more accommodating, more compromising in his language. And, of course, he held that job for 16 years. And then when he became governor for the first term – very much, you know, all about compromise. And he still throws those words out, but you can really see the difference. I wouldn't say he's aggressive, but I would say that he was definitely assertive.
And he's coming off a very strong reelection in November 2012, which gives you clout.
And we've talked about this before. We won't belabor the point. But if he does have ambitions at a much higher level, he still has to kind of watch what he does and what he says and how he acts. That could have an impact on his future.
But I think, though, he also has to build up his Democratic credentials, because during his first term, there were some people who contended that he was a Democrat in name only. And while he resisted that, he didn't resist it too much. Mm. Now it seems like there are certain things he is trying to make a point of, yes, I am a Democrat and this is what I stand for, which indicates that he may be thinking ahead to 2016. And because there is some speculation of whether or not he would challenge Roy Blunt for the U.S. Senate, or will he contest the waters for president? Mm. Or will he at least try to be high on the short list for VP if it's, you know, Hillary Clinton or somebody else?
Or a cabinet position, attorney general.
Yeah, attorney general. I think that you brought up a good point, because I think many of us forget that there are other things besides president or vice president that a governor might be looking at.
And there is a precedent certainly in Missouri for former attorneys general winding up as attorney general of the U.S. Right. We've got to take another break. We'll do that. We're talking in response to Governor Jay Nixon's State of the State address last night. With me in studio is Professor Terry Jones of the University of Missouri, St. Louis, and Joe Manis of the St. Louis Beacon. We'd like to get you into the discussion as well. Give us a call if there's anything you'd like to say. What did you hear that you liked or disliked last night? And what didn't you hear that perhaps you wanted to? Give us a call, 382-8255. Email talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. You can also reach us through Facebook. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we analyze Governor Jay Nixon's State of the State address last night. I'm going to backtrack just a little bit here before moving on. We had a tweet from Colleen who asks, is Nixon going to start refusing donations that violate the spirit of his proposal?
No.
you don't unilaterally disarm.
Yes, and he's always said that. And if there's anything that that is definitely true about Jay Nixon is that he will not put himself in a position of being weak. I mean, this guy used to play basketball before his knees went out along with – and I share that problem. But he has always been a very competitive person, and that's why during the election this fall, even when polls showed him well ahead of Republican Dave Spence, I mean, Nixon went on the attack and just ground that gentleman – into the ground. And fair or unfair, but that's Nixon. So he will not unilaterally disarm or refuse any money. I can definitely say that.
The governor's known throughout Jefferson City for her sharp elbows on the basketball court.
Yes.
Moving on to something else now. Were either of you surprised that there were no real references to school security following what happened in Newtown? He did bring up mental health, which is about the only reference, I think, to the security issue.
I was mildly surprised, but I understand the rationale behind it. Getting involved in the gun control debate is typically a loser for Democrats in Missouri. because it opens them up to the charge that they don't really understand rural Missouri. Governor Nixon has made much of his political argument and rationale that he understands both urban and rural Missouri, and he's from rural Missouri. So I can see why he would want to stay away from the issue in terms of any type of sharp change in current policy.
Yeah, because I think he has come out. I noticed he didn't bring it up, but he has come out against putting the guns in schools. But otherwise, I think he sees this mainly as a federal issue, except for the mental health part, because I think he does acknowledge that this has been something he's been hearing from local officials. Mayor Slay has mentioned this to me, that they're seeing such a high percentage of people in the jails and the homeless centers that are mentally ill. And so they're concerned about people like that getting a weapon. And there's this other aspect of Nixon. Nixon is a hunter. I mean, he really is a hunter. I mean, him showing him on the hunting trail, killing a deer or something like that, he's not doing that just for campaign purposes. He really does hunt. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes some Democrats cringe when he brags that he caught the limit of doves on the first day of dove hunting season, but which he did. But that's part of Nixon. So I could see why he would choose to avoid discussing that part of it other than the mental health part.
It would work better for him if he shot a couple of grizzlies as opposed to doves. Huh?
Yeah, that would look a bit staged.
Well, he's got to have plenty of opportunity to deal with this apparently, because Joe, the legislature has got a whole slew of bills relating to gun control and guns in schools and that sort of thing.
Yes, I think that you might see him, as I said, he mentioned weeks ago that he wasn't too keen on this guns in schools idea. And part of it's because as I've mentioned, that in Missouri, public schools are pretty much autonomous. I mean, the districts, there's only limited state control. And to the all of these bills basically take away some of that local control in order to mandate that they allow teachers or other school personnel to be armed. And he has come out against that, basically framing it in terms of the local control issue. So I could see him vetoing or standing up to some of that. Because like a number of education groups, including, you know, not just teacher groups, but also on the administrative end, have come out against that. So he may press that. But I noticed, too, that he didn't mention it last night, other than the mental health part, which I think both sides do have some agreement on.
Terry, no real surprise that this legislature would be addressing the gun issue the way that it has in such numbers.
Well, whenever the media and events put something on the agenda, it's the natural reaction of an elected official to start talking about it, because that's when people want to have a conversation. But in Missouri, there's still more of a political clout by those who want less gun control rather than those that want more.
All right. Okay. We have an email from Terry here that I'll read. I find it ironic that Governor Nixon bragged about services to the disabled, yet they cut $3 million out of rehab services for the blind, causing them to have all offices service more people with less resources. This also caused the state to have to return money back to the feds for blind services. Any thoughts about that sort of thing?
Well, he tried to fight a lot of that last year. So I think that this year's budget, I don't see – there are no cuts that I have seen like that. When they were talking about cuts in the state worker ranks, the ones that were in the social services were basically tied to improvements in computers and other things, not so much on the direct service level. I mean, last year Nixon – really came out strongly against the Republican proposed elimination of benefits, special benefits that are in Missouri for blind.
What about the perennial tax credits issue, Terry Jones? What are we hearing about that?
Well, the governor tied that very directly to the prospects for a bond issue for various types of state buildings and other facility improvements, saying that he needed a dedicated revenue source. We're spending over $600 million a year on tax credits, and those are expenditures from the state because there's taxes that other would be received but otherwise are not, and that he's holding that out as a necessity for his support for a bond issue, capping or reducing some of those tax credits.
Right. Joe?
Yeah, I thought that was interesting that he linked the two. Basically saying, I'm for the bond issue, but you have to do this to pay for it, or I won't go for it. And that also brings up another split within the Republican donor ranks, because you do have some Republican donors, including Ziegfeld, who actually agree with him on the tax credit issue, would like to eliminate the tax credit. So this is another case where Republican leaders are going to be hearing different things from their constituents, because you've got some who rely on the tax credits for their businesses, and then you got others who philosophically say you need to get rid of them. And so I think that this kind of sets up another case of, it won't be just between the governor versus legislative leaders. It'll be governor versus legislative leaders versus their different constituencies.
When you look at Speaker Jones's remark, as well as the governor's, when you look at other quotes coming out of Jefferson City, there's general consensus on the appropriateness of doing a bond issue at this point. The state needs these facilities. The bond rating is good. Interest rates are low. But this is an extraordinarily difficult thing to bring off legislatively, because if ever the devils were in the details, it's on a bond issue.
Well, he also proposed in the budget putting sales tax on internet sales, because that's something that Missouri doesn't. And there's been estimates that it could be up to a couple hundred million a year that the state loses in sales tax revenue. So there has been – that has never gotten through the legislature, even though there's been some Republican support for it. So he brought that up in his budget as well. So that will be something to watch, to see if the legislature comes through and actually does it.
Well, why has the legislature not been amenable to that?
Well, part of it is because even though there are some Republicans who agree that it's not fair to local businesses, it's still seen as a tax increase. Mm-hmm. And no Republican, I mean, Democrats too, but especially Republicans, they're worried about being primaried by somebody who says, you know, Representative so-and-so here, they voted for a tax increase. And then trying to explain that, well, it was on, you know, internet businesses, yada, yada, yada. I mean, that's not a good soundbite.
No. But this is something that's going to have to happen one of these days, Terry, isn't it?
And it is happening state by state. Over 20 states have now signed on to a thing called the Streamlined Sales Tax. And that's what the governor proposed doing in his address yesterday. The Missouri signed on to that, which lessens the difficulty for e-commerce corporations and enterprises to take the tax because it has you can program in all of the variations. So this is coming. It's a question of how soon.
Yeah. There wasn't too much evidence of bipartisan support on the floor for various things that he said last night. But one of the times when he did receive applause from the Republican side of the aisle was when he talked about veterans and making things better for them as they return to getting into the job market. What about overall the jobs issue as presented by the governor?
It was interesting that instead of concentrating on specific programs like quality jobs and subsidies, that the economic development focus was, well, I have two ideas for developing Missouri's economy, improving its education and expanding Medicaid.
Yes, that was one notable thing. Most of his talk about jobs in his speech was about things that had already happened. Like he talked about, you know, saving the jobs at the Ford plant a couple years ago in suburban Kansas City, and use that as an example of bipartisan efforts. But yes, he didn't bring up any new economic jobs initiatives, which frankly had been a hallmark of his State of the State addresses for his first term. Very different.
And it's such an important issue and a discussion point nationally as well, obviously, with unemployment the way it is.
But there's two reasons why he did it. Missouri's unemployment is lower than the federal government. And the reason he can talk about some of these spending increases is because the state, after several years of declines or stagnant revenue, is just starting now to see some additional revenue. And it looks like 2014... the fiscal year, which begins July 1st, barring anything unexpected, could be a decent year and actually produce a couple hundred million in additional income. Now, you've got Republicans, as we mentioned, who want to give that, who want to cut taxes and not have that money to spend, because if you've got that extra hundred million sitting around, then it becomes more difficult to say we can't afford the Medicaid expansion.
Terry, did you have any sense of him reaching out to the Republican side of the aisle last night? He did say a couple of times we can accomplish it by working together. It seemed like he was at least paying lip service to that.
Well, in the agreement to if Medicaid is expanded, to have conditions in the legislation that would allow Missouri to leave the program if the federal government withdrew all or some of his support. So, yes, I thought he was more conciliatory in tone than Speaker Jones was in his remarks, where among he took a few pot shots at the governor, if you look at some of the phrases he used.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I was surprised by some characterizations of the governor as being aggressive, because I thought actually Jones, and I'm not knocking it, but I thought Jones was a bit more partisan in his remarks than the governor was. Now, that's not unusual. I mean, that usually whoever the governor is, the leader of the opposition, tends to do that because you want to highlight your differences.
Well, you know, the impression I got in listening to Speaker Jones was the fact that he knows that he and his party are pretty much in the catbird seat down there.
In the legislature, yeah. Yes. But Jones has got one other thing going. He's also thinking in the back of his mind, Speaker Tim Jones has made clear to me and other reporters he is looking at running for something in 2016 statewide. So he also sees that there's a split. The Republicans did really well, actually gained a couple seats in the State House. We're pretty flat. They actually lost a seat or two in the State Senate. But in the statewide, Republicans did real bad. So if he wants to shift from where things are doing really well for Republicans to winning statewide, he has to he's seeing how he can move from one world to the other world. And so he's got that in the back of his mind, too.
But it's a difficult two-step. He has to worry about the Republican primary, where the electorate is going to say who's the most Republican of them all, and then the general election where centrist policies are more popular.
Exactly.
It's an interesting thing with politicians. When they point to the east, your first reaction probably should be to look to the west. Let's bring in Jerry from O'Fallon, Missouri. He wants to get into the discussion. Jerry, time is running away, but make it quick, please.
Yes, just very quickly. I listened to the speech last night, and I have to say that anyone with any level of intelligence knows that, you know, an ounce of cure is worth an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Adding to Medicaid, the Medicaid expansion will save money because you will find people that have preventable issues if they're earlier diagnosed. That's going to cost us all in the system much more if they don't have access to this. And not only that, but people will actually die because they can't get Medicaid. And to have heard in the description that some of the Republican lawmakers were actually chuckling when the governor made this remark is particularly offensive to me. I really can't say for once what I would like to say on the radio, but I just wanted to make that point. Thank you.
Jerry, thanks for the call. Joe, you were nodding during Jerry's comments.
Yeah, it was subtle. But yes, there was some. But again, this is a philosophical issue. It's not just about money for Republicans. They really believe that the best way to resolve this is through the free market.
Mm-hmm. And there's a strong dollar and cents argument to expand Medicaid, and we're going to hear that argument again and again, and the governor's going to be leading that debate.
We've got 1 minute left. Let me give each of you 30 seconds to put a cap on what happened last night.
Yes, I think what you saw was what you're going to see over the next few months, but you saw it up close. And anybody who didn't see it, they can go on the internet and the governor's website and actually see the speech or read the words. And I think people should, regardless. And they ought to look on Speaker Jones's website and look at his remarks as well.
Right. Terry?
Oh, my God, we have a little more money than we had last year. That's a change. And so now we can see the governor's priorities. When new money comes, first of all, it's not to give them back through a tax rate reduction. It's to invest them in education at all levels.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll let it go at that. Thank you so much, Joe Manis, for being with us. That's stlbeacon.org. We want to make sure that we get that word out. And congratulations to you once again for that Lifetime Achievement Award. We're laughing, but it's a nice honor.
And no,
it's certainly,
yes.
Certainly well-deserved.
Thank
Terry
you.
Jones, great to see you again. Thanks so much for lending us your expertise during the course of this
thanks,
program.
Tom.
I want to extend my thanks, too, to Adam Allington, who was with us at the top of the program for bringing us up to speed on what was going on downtown and still is, as far as we know, several hundred 100 retirees from Peabody Coal are very, very concerned about the possibility, the threat that they could lose their pensions, and they are demonstrating. So thanks to Adam for that. A reminder that you can continue to find follow-up information about the 2012 election at beyondnovember.org. That's a collaboration of St. Louis Public Radio, the St. Louis Beacon, and the Nine Network of Public Media. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the origins of a river town, a new anthology of East St. Louis. Its citizens once thought their town was poised to outdistance St. Louis and perhaps even Chicago as the premier industrial giant of the Midwest. Then things started to go wrong. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.